WBUR.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Up against a wall of angry investors and a bottomless market, America's CEOs faced a deadline today. By 5:30 this evening, executives at more than 900 of the largest companies in the country had to submit a signed certification to the Securities and Exchange Commission. We swear by our corporate books, their signatures said, it's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. This hour, America's CEOs put their hands on their hearts and say, trust us, but can you? We begin tonight with market reaction to the CEO statements. The Dow fought back a powerful early sell-off with a soaring late-day rally, closing up more than 260 points. But the market remains volatile. Earlier, I spoke with James Surowiecki, financial columnist for The New Yorker magazine. I asked him where he thinks we are now in this crisis of investor confidence in the honesty of America's corporate books.
I think the reaction of the market today to the certification was sort of interesting because I think it suggests that we're probably relatively late in the cycle, if you can talk about a cycle. You know, the market ended up, I think the S&P was up 4%, and the restatements that we saw were relatively minor, and even those companies that did announce restatements, there were actually very few that anybody would have heard of, were down only 1 or 2%.
People were looking to restatements from companies that might have had grossly cooked books and had to come clean today. You're saying so far we haven't seen much of that.
Yeah, there's been almost none of that. I mean, the biggest one was probably that company Interpublic, which the ad company, which, you know, last night or I guess 2 nights ago announced it would be sort of holding off on the restatement. But, you know, interestingly, AOL Time Warner, which I think some people had been concerned about, went ahead and certified despite some of the questions about its accounting. And I think the other, probably the biggest other company was the bank Capital One Financial, which is a big credit card giant. But, you know, its restatement was relatively minor. It had to do with stock options. And so we obviously don't know. I mean, it's possible that companies are certifying and then 3 or 4 months down the road we'll find out that things are very different. I mean, just look at the way the WorldCom news broke in stages. But at the moment, I think it looks as if we're relatively late in this cycle.
This sounds like a significant turning point, James Surowiecki. That only a few weeks ago the fear was that all of corporate America was a vast minefield of cookbooks waiting to explode and drag the market down farther.
Yeah, and it does seem as if today at least that fear is really beginning to dissipate. I think you could see that over the last week or so. And in some ways, the magnitude of the scandals was such that it's not surprising that people reacted with so much fear. And we also know, historically speaking, that fraud is something that definitely follows big booms as investors get sort of more giddy and pay less attention to what they should be paying attention to. And I think people were afraid that it might go much deeper than, say, Enron and WorldCom and Global Crossing and, you know, the list. But at this moment, it actually looks pretty good, which one thing I'll say about that, it's interesting that this certification seems to have worked. In other words, the requirement that companies certify at this moment seems to have had, you know, a pretty positive effect.
The SEC was hoping that this would be a clarifying moment after which consumers or investors could have renewed confidence that things were relatively clean. But you're suggesting then that what we'd see is not perhaps the endemic or really pervasive kind of corrupt accounting practices that the fear was flying on not long ago, that maybe it is, in fact, the few, or not few enough, but still relatively few bad apples.
Yeah, I think, and that, you know, in a sense is probably what we probably should have been expecting all along. I mean, there's no question that there were enormous excesses, I think, specifically in the field of executive compensation. And we still have not fully dealt with the question of stock options. But even in that area, if you look at it, it's very interesting that a lot of very big companies, GE, Coke, GM, have said that they're going to be essentially expensing options, even Amazon.com, for example. And that, I think, has had some effect on the market. And I think the bigger thing is that, in a sense, the SEC gave companies a chance to come out and essentially put their reputations on the line, which you would have thought that's what they would have been doing all along. But, you know, in effect, this has provided this sort of signal moment for people to step up and say, we think these numbers are good. That, I think, is probably, I think when the SEC first announced this plan, to me it seemed a little gimmicky, and it obviously still is a little gimmicky, but at a time when so much of what has been happening in the market has been just purely, I think, a lack of confidence feeding on itself, sometimes symbolic moments are, you know, can actually be quite useful.
I guess it also helps put things in perspective. If 900 companies come up with clean books and even 10 or 20 have bad ones, there's some perspective. Only a few weeks ago, each new single company, speaking of bad books, set the market into hysteria.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, if you look at actually Capital One Financial, which is one of these companies that restated, that was sort of my favorite example of this, was, you know, they had announced after these, they announced blowout earnings, but also announced that they had had to change a very small number relative to their sales. And their stock dropped, I think, something like 35% on that single day. That was definitely the climate. That was maybe, you know, just 3 or 4 weeks ago. And now I think you're seeing investors sort of look more judiciously at the whole picture. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there are still problems in some places lurking. But the magnitude of maybe that of the problems that we thought existed now looks maybe somewhat smaller.
James Surowiecki is a financial columnist for The New Yorker magazine. He spoke with us earlier from New York. We're talking tonight about the Certificate of Truth being signed today by America's top CEOs. Are CEO assurances of clean corporate numbers enough to restore your confidence in the honesty of American business? Can the bad habits of a boom decade be turned around with a signature? Will it help? Are we finally turning the corner on our business crisis? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me in the studio tonight is Jay Lorsch, professor at the Harvard Business School and author of Aligning the Stars, How to Succeed When Professionals Drive the Results. Good evening and welcome, Jay Lorsch.
Nice to see you, Tom.
Good to see you. So, Jay Lorsch, are we coming out of the woods here? It's been an awful season for confidence in the way American corporations do business. Is the reaction today, is the failure of a wave of bad books to emerge today, and the market's response to that, a sign that we're coming out of the woods?
Well, I think we're, you know, I think there's a number of reasons why we've had this crisis of confidence, one of which is what some people would refer to as cooked books. And to some extent, I think the signing of the certificates today probably has allayed some concerns about that. But there are other issues out there. One is the fact that a lot of people lost a lot of money in this market, and
sure
that's shaken their confidence as investors. The other piece of it is the piece that your previous speaker mentioned, the question of CEO compensation. I think a lot of people are just, you know, is it a crisis? It's part of the crisis of confidence is just anger at CEOs who people see as being very greedy. I think that problem has not really been addressed yet. And so I'm not sure that, you know, one day the market going up doesn't mean the problem, the investor's confidence is back. I think we got to wait a while to see. I do believe the certificate, these certificates have probably had a salutary effect on people's confidence, and I think they're going to have a positive effect on the way CEOs and other senior executives think about accounting. But that's probably the best news.
Take us inside, to the extent that you can, the mind of CEOs of these enormous publicly traded corporations today. Does this requirement, which will now become an annual requirement, I guess, but through the right. Sarbanes-Oxley bill, that, which passed was signed into law on July 30th, the SEC made this a one-time thing, but it's going to now be permanently required that CEOs and CFOs sign off on their books. Does that put the fear of God into American CEOs? Does it really change the way they think about looking into the numbers they're reporting?
I know it's the fear of God, Tom, but I think, you know, accounting is not an exact science. There's a lot of room for judgment and estimation in a number of aspects of putting together a company's financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
I think what this is bound to do is make CEOs, CFOs, controllers, the accounting people a lot more conservative. I think part of what we've had over the last several years is really very aggressive accounting. I mean, it hasn't all been fraud and crime. You know, a lot of what's caused people problems is just, you know, making judgments that are very aggressive in order to make your earnings look better and to meet the expectations of the analysts for mm-hmm. quarter-to-quarter results. I think these statements are going to make all these people, and particularly these CEOs, be somewhat more conservative, and I hope that's one of the ways I believe it's going to have a positive effect.
So the whole center of gravity of American accounting practice may move to a more conservative posture.
Yeah, I think so. To the extent that there's judgment in this, I think it is going to be more conservative.
The CEOs have
played the game in recent months at companies under scrutiny of, hey, I didn't know, I'm the CEO, I'm above all of this stuff. Connect the dots for us here. Inside a major corporation, do you believe that CEOs could not have known about how their numbers were being crunched, how they were being accounted for?
I find that hard to believe, but I guess if somebody down the line is doing something illegal, it may be possible for CEOs not to know what's going on, and that's where the auditors come in, obviously. But my own guess is that most of these CEOs who signed these statements today, from the few I've had a chance to talk to, have been very, very careful to make sure that the people underneath them are telling them the truth. I know of some examples where CEOs have said, if I'm going to sign this statement for the whole company, you're going to sign a similar statement for me for your business. Because then if they come back at me, I can come back at you. I was told the other story of a CEO of a major Wall Street institution who spent the last 2 weeks, a few hours a day, talking to his controller and others, trying to go through every number to assure himself that he knew what was going on. Well, that's a powerful, powerful signal.
And sure is. The whole company is going to know about that.
The story's going around already. So, I mean, people are going to realize if the boss cares and is paying that much attention to it, we better be sure it's right.
So what is the CEO saying to his outside accounting firm in that case? I mean, it won't be Arthur Andersen anymore, but whoever it may be, is he saying to them, look, guys, I'm paying you a lot of money to audit these books, and yeah, last year we liked pushing the limits, but this year we don't want to do that anymore, and I want you to explain to me the new conservative posture you're going to take?
Well, one of the things that's changed, Tom, I think, in all of this is that the CEO is no longer going to be talking to the accounting firm. It's the board of directors and specifically the audit committee.
So that will float up to the board of directors, truly will be independent oversight.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, I'm not saying this is happening in every company in America, but I think where there are responsible boards, you're going to see the audit committee and particularly the chairman of the audit committee saying to the auditors just what you said. And the relationship between the auditors and the company is now going to be through that audit committee, not so much to the CEO or the CFO.
Oh, this is getting deep into it here, but the whole country's economy has been hinging on these things in the last few weeks. We want to understand, when the books are prepared by a chief financial officer in a corporation,
right,
will they then come up through the CEO and to the independent auditor and back down before the CEO signs off? Will some big accounting firm have looked at them independently in addition to his own internal executives?
If we're talking about the statements for the year, yes, they'll be audited by the auditor, mm-hmm. And I think the auditor will report to the audit committee, this is what we found, and this is what we think, and this is our opinion. Now, the CEO can obviously has to, if he's going to be signing, he's got to accept that opinion, but I think he's going to be relying on the auditor, he's going to be relying on his own management people, and I think to some extent he's going to take some comfort that this audit committee of the board has looked at it too, because in a sense they are the independent representatives of the shareholders.
Jay Lorsch, what's the buzz at say, Harvard Business School? It looks as though these loosey-goosey accounting practices were kind of baked into the cake of the 90s boom. They helped the numbers go so high because so much was allowed. Without those practices, is there any way that American companies can be reporting returns that are going to satisfy investors?
Well, I think that it's clear that some of these things are going to probably make the earnings less buoyant than they were in the 90s. Again, you know, we're going to have, I think, more and more companies are going to reflect the cost of stock options in their financial statements. Well, that alone, that's a drag. It depends on, you know, for some companies it's not a huge drag, but for other companies it's going to be a big drag. And I think one of the interesting debates that's still going on in the business community is between the people in California who don't want to do that because it's going to be such a big drag on
Silicon Valley gang.
Yeah, and particularly the venture capitalists out there and people on this side of the Rockies who are saying, no, we got to do it. It's the right thing to do, and who are doing it.
You're a professor of human relations at the Harvard Business School. Describe the meeting where the top execs inside a corporation sit around and say to each other, boys, we had our fun, but that's over now. It's going to be straight and narrow.
Well, I think metaphorically, that's exactly what I think is going on in the heads of a lot of CEOs, to go back to your earlier question.
Do they actually say it to their colleagues?
Oh, I'm sure it's being signaled in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the fact that so many CEOs are saying, if I sign this statement to their subordinates, you guys got to sign a similar statement for your business. The message is getting out.
So it's out there.
It's going to be out there, right.
It's being heard, and maybe the market is hearing it as well. James Sirwicket, The New Yorker, says we may be turning around here. Jay Lorsch in our studio tonight from Harvard Business School says the message is going out to corporate executive hallways and offices. What do you think? Does a new CEO signature on the company books put your investor heart at ease? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
On in Hyannis.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about American CEOs swearing by the numbers that their corporations report. There was a big deadline today for several hundred American CEOs. There's a rolling deadline that will take it on through late in the year. But a lot of big ones have come in, yet there was a great fear that many bad apples would turn up today. They did not. There was not a wave of restated numbers that might have sent the market down, and the absence of that sent the market up. What do you think? Have we hit bottom in the crisis of confidence in American business? Are we turning the corner here? Do you think CEOs are feeling the fear of God yet when they plot financial strategies in American business offices? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined in the studio tonight by Jay Lorsch. He's professor of human relations at Harvard Business School. And now from Austin, Texas, by Henry Hugh. He's corporate and securities law professor at the University of Texas Law School. Good evening and welcome, Henry Hugh.
Thank you so much, Tom.
It's good to hear your voice.
Good seeing you again.
Henry Hugh, talk to us about the legal clout of these signatures that are being required now today by the Securities and Exchange Commission and in perpetually now by the Sarbanes-Oxley bill. What is the weight of this requirement? When the CEO puts his John Hancock on that line, how much legal weight, how much threat of law does he face?
The regime is materially different. That is that the potential risks faced by the CEO and CFO have significantly increased as a result of this, and in two different sorts of ways. Mm-hmm. One is in the sense of the law on the books, and then the other sort of way in terms of law in practice. And in terms of the law on the books, basically, because the CEO and the CFO have to put their John Hancocks on these filings, mm-hmm. it makes it much more difficult for them to try to avoid liability, for instance, in case of private plaintiffs suing them personally for violations of securities law. That is, they can no longer argue, for instance, that because they were not directly involved in terms of the preparation of these documents, that they were merely at most aiders and abettors mm-hmm. rather than so-called primary violators. And if you are certifying these financials, a private plaintiff's attorney could basically, you know, makes it much easier for them to argue you are a primary violator, and therefore I can sue you.
And will that really stick in the courts, Henry Hugh? Or can a CEO of an enormous corporation stand up and say, yes, I signed this because it's required, but it's pro forma? How could I know about all these divisions results?
Well, in fact, it puts the CEO and CFO in a defense mode in terms of trying to argue that they didn't have the necessary bad intent, which is necessary under the standard anti-fraud provision and the like. It significantly changes the dynamic in the court. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, in terms of the law on the in practice, that is, you know, that's law in the books. Basically,
yes.
it increases the exposure to private plaintiff lawsuits, among other things, in addition to various governmental actions can be taken.
And the CEO can't feel immune from that. At the law level, Henry Hugh, take us through the listed consequences if any of these statements that they've signed off to are found to be false. What's the punishment?
Well, for instance, in terms of the Sarbanes-Oxley, in the worst case, I mean, they're talking about a 20-year jail time.
And this is now, the big business reform package that went through Capitol Hill last month.
Exactly. As you know, as you correctly pointed out, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002 that was just enacted end of last month, in effect, codifies the SEC certification requirement and indeed goes further than that requirement.
20 years in prison is the threat if the numbers are found to be wrong. Can you imagine anyone actually being sentenced to that?
Well, there are limits in terms of, for instance, they make distinctions between willful and knowing violations and the like, so that, you know, in practical terms, that's not, you know, we're talking about a truly extraordinary case. That's not going to happen in the real world. In the real world, in terms of the law on the books, in terms of the usual kind of garden variety fraud that might happen, that you are trying to really deter, the key issue is, in a sense, at the margin, preventing a CEO or a CFO from getting, say, overly aggressive in terms of earnings management, so overly aggressive it may be, you know, conceivably over the line. The idea is, at the margin, if you increase the personal risk to that to those two people, they will be, you know, less willing to go too close to the line or perhaps cross the line.
So you're saying it's a legal threat and even a prison threat, but it's really a cultural shift, a different way of thinking about how aggressive people can be in pushing the numbers.
Exactly. And that the idea behind this increased personal risk is that these rational certifying officers will take that into account in the benefits cost calculus in terms of deciding how close the line, what they perceive the line to be, they want to be.
Henry, how airtight are the laws around these statements and signatures? Could a good lawyer find a loophole that relieves CEOs and CFOs of the responsibility they claim to be taking here?
Well, in terms of the initial wave of certifications prompted by the June or SEC order, there is an argument available that the SEC really didn't have authority to mandate this, because they were basically relying on a statutory provision which was meant for basically company-specific investigations. That is, you know, the SEC has powers to investigate
one by one.
One by one, basically, right. Mm-hmm. But here you have a situation where suddenly the SEC is saying, you know, 1,800 people, right, 950 of the largest companies times two.
I've got to say, I think that there seem to have a public mandate for that. Jay Lorsch, what's your assessment? Do you think this has or will change the corporate culture?
Yeah, I do, and I think that's a very good word to use. I think that was what I was trying to explain before. Mm-hmm. I think the beliefs about how we do things around here, which is what you basically mean by culture, I think are going to shift as a result of this and as a result of other things going on. But this is going to have a significant impact on the culture as it pertains to how we think about our accounting practices.
We're talking about CEOs swearing by their corporate numbers. We're at 1-800-423-8255. David's calling from Spokane, Washington. Welcome, David. You're on the air.
Yes. As Milton Friedman said, the social responsibility of business is profit. That's the true mantra of America, not in God we trust. Their job is to squeeze the American wallet out of its tight pocket and get the consumer to give up as many dollars as they can and have as many of those dollars as they can go into those corporate coffers.
David, what are you suggesting by that? That they should break any rule they can and that's just the American way, or something else?
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying that all you have to do is look at a long and continuous history of American corporate behavior and you'll see that. And it's going to continue in one form or the other. And the idea that they're presenting honest and true numbers right now, I just don't believe it.
So you're a big skeptic, David. But you don't agree that the threat of punishment may change the culture inside these executive hallways?
No, I don't believe that. There's the corporate congressional alliance. These people receive share money back and forth, and this is all politics and business as usual. And the system depends on profit. You got to milk it one way or the other. And if you got to milk it in some dishonest ways, social responsibility of business is profit, said Milton Friedman.
And David, we've got your perspective, and we can hear that it's deeply felt. On the other hand, we've seen cycles in this, and the 90s does look, in retrospect, like a time when the lines got pushed way out to the Wild West. Let's bring in someone who's right in the heart of this world right now. I want to welcome to our conversation Charles Brown. He's Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President at Office Depot. He joins us from Delray Beach, Florida. Good evening, and welcome, Charles Brown.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you've heard a little bit of this, Charles Brown, and give us your sense. I guess today, or I think in Office Depot's case, you turned your reports in even earlier, but does it bring a new sense of weight on the shoulder when you've got to put, you see the CEO signature and your own right there on these numbers? Do you think in your case, or generally, that this is making it more imminent in people's minds and sharper in executives' minds, the responsibility they're taking on when they submit these numbers?
Right. Well, I think it's important to view these certificates in the larger context of corporate governance and integrity in general.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, things have changed for everyone involved with a public company, whether you're a CEO, CFO, board member, or a public accountant.
In what way, Charles Brown?
Well, the rules have changed, and what people have, there's going to be a lot more rules, a lot more friction in the system, if you will, as people struggle to comply. But I think, more importantly, the investing public's expectations have changed.
You just heard perhaps our caller from Spokane, Washington, say American corporations are there to make money. They're going to do it any way they can. Rules be damned. Do you believe that now in this new era, if we're in a new era?
Well, I agree with the first half, that that we are there to make money. But I don't think it's rules be damned. I think that the majority of CEOs and CFOs out there take their roles and responsibilities very seriously, and they're going to continue to do what they do, which is look after their employees, their communities, and their shareholders.
Have you had a sit down at your company at Office Depot with the CEO yourself, other top executives, where you said, ladies and gentlemen, the culture has changed, expectations have changed, there are accounting practices that may have looked tempting before that we can no longer be tempted by?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's quite interesting because you had mentioned earlier that we had filed our statement early. And I think that's because here at Office Depot, many of the systems and controls that are required for a robust financial reporting process have been in place for some time. And therefore, we were able to get through our due diligence very quickly. And it's the same reason that the SEC now has a 45-day reporting requirement for quarterly statements.
Mm-hmm.
We file in 30 days.
So we salute you for that. Look out across the country for us. Do you think that in other corporations there's going to be an active, articulated, explicit shift in the way accounting is done?
Well, I think that I want to think no, but I think that the truth is probably yes, and I think the fact that it's taken some folks a while to get through their own due diligence, and I'm not exactly sure how many people met the requirement today.
Yeah.
But that's a worrying sign, unfortunately.
That there are still some sitting out there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Charles Brown, CFO at Office Depot, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
We're talking about CEOs swearing today by the numbers of their corporations and the report they've made. We're at 1-800-423-8255. A lot of people want to join this conversation. Let's welcome them in. Peter's on the line. Welcome, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been listening to what the other people have been saying, and obviously I agree with almost all of it. But the question I would like to ask the experts is, what hit do you think this will make in the stock market? Because people over the last couple of years, until times got, were looking at tremendous sales growth and certainly profit growth. And now with everyone becoming super conservative, because, mm-hmm. When things were fuzzy right now, maybe got away with a few accounting things that were a little questionable. Now they're going to be super conservative. This has got to have a hit on every single corporation's accounting procedures and reported profits. Mm-hmm. What's this going to do to the market going forward? Because the average investor is not going to see these 10, 15, or 20% increases when the conservatism starts to kick in, which is almost immediately.
Peter, it's a great question. That's exactly what we know investors are wondering about and asking today. The market's up. Jay Lors talked a little bit about this, but Henry Hugh, let me put it to you. First of all, can we see the kind of earnings growth that investors have become used to? And maybe Peter points to the fact that there's a whole system that has to adjust here. Are American investors also going to have to adjust their expectations once this conservative accounting kicks in?
Ultimately, you know, Disneyland is fun, but ultimately you have to leave the fantasy world at the end of the day. And I think that it's important for the longer-run integrity of the capital markets that the information be correct, lumpy and all, warts and all.
That means you can't just expect that smooth as silk, whatever it is, 5-10%. You can't expect people to be right on their numbers every time, because if they are, it suggests those numbers may have been massaged.
I worry a little bit when a company shows a perfect 12% growth pattern and always manages to beat expected earnings by one penny.
But are American investors prepared to accept that lumpiness, as you describe it, that the more erratic kind of reporting that real strict by-the-book accounting may produce?
In fact, I think it's absolutely essential for investors to lower their expectations significantly. I don't think that in terms of the next 10, 15 years, we're going to see even the 9 or 10% that some of these supposedly more conservative investment advisors are pitching.
Does that mean, in spite of the market spike today, that it's got to come down to adjust to those lower expectations?
You know, I have no idea in terms of day-to-day movements. I don't think anybody does.
But over time.
I think over time, investors still have expectations that are excessive in terms of what they what they can get from putting money in the market.
Henry Hugh, I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. You're terrific.
Not at all. Let me make just one very quick, two real quick comments directly related to this last question.
Great.
Quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's in terms of the CEO certification and so forth, I think it will make a difference in terms of, as Professor Lorsch points out, in terms of, and you have pointed out, in terms of improving norms and so forth, and in terms on the corporate side. But as this caller just indicated, you know, an important element is in terms of what investors think and how investors behave as well. And I got to emphasize that in terms of investors, I mean, two of the key rules for that ultimately investors have to take responsibility for themselves, and that the two of the rules that they should keep in mind is, you know, that there is no bountiful, you know, riches. There is no possibility of bountiful riches at no risk. There is no such thing as a free lunch.
So get over it.
Get over it, right. And number two, you know, notwithstanding all these CEO certifications and the like, you know, you might want to think twice before investing in a company run by a CEO whose nickname is Shifty.
Yeah, I guess so. Henry Hugh, thanks so much for being
with
us.
Thank you so much, both. Bye.
Henry Hugh joined us from Austin, Texas. He's a corporate and securities law professor at the University of Texas Law School. Jay Lorsch, it sounds here like today was the CEO's turn, but as our callers and Henry Hugh point out, everyone's got a piece in this readjustment. If corporations readjust the way they account, investors are going to have to readjust expectations.
I think that's absolutely right, not just because of the accounting, but just the other example, of course, we talked about earlier is the options. You know, and I also would just offer a word of caution. Just because the market went up 260 points today doesn't mean we're out of this problem, because it could be down 290 points tomorrow. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now. My guess is we're nearing the bottom. I think a lot of other experts who know more about it than I have suggested the same thing. But I think it's going to take time for us to really see where this market is. But in the end, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And what the caller said, you know, we've got to adjust our expectations to lower earnings.
But the wheels are turning. What do you think? Can the habits of a decade or more be overturned with a signature? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Americans' CEOs swearing by their corporate numbers, their financial reporting. The signatures were due for hundreds of them on the bottom line today. What do you think? Does a new CEO signature on the company books put your investor heart at ease? What's your level of trust in American business now? And I guess, do you miss the 90s joyride, or are you happier to get back to good, sober reality? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio is Jay Lohr. She's professor of human relations at Harvard Business School and author of Aligning the Stars, How to Succeed When Professionals Drive Results. A lot of callers want to join this conversation as well. Let's turn to them. Dana's on the line. Welcome, Dana. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi.
I just don't feel it. What I've heard of this discussion gets to the heart of the matter at all.
And where is that, Dana?
Well, we haven't heard enough about questioning the whole idea of, you know, these corporations taking a scout oath to be honest in their accounting mm-hmm. and everything. I think Enron and .com or whatever, that WorldCom, are symptoms of the what is essentially wrong with corporate culture and bottom line motivation. That's why I really think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in corporate America that is legal that I feel gives them an undue advantage over working people like us who aren't even investors.
What are you thinking of in particular, Dana?
Well, I'll think of two in particular. Stock options, not treated as expenses,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's still, they're not going to be held to that yet. And also, what else hasn't been addressed, and I've never heard this in any discussions on media, is the idea of auditors also serving as consultants to the companies they audit.
I mean, the accountants they hire to come in, turning around and being consultants on the other hand.
Yeah, those are just two examples.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and there's also the disparity of, like, you know, 500 times, a CEO gets 500 times what an average working person gets. And
mm-hmm.
these are symptoms of corporate culture. And here we are disguising, hiding all of this under the cloak of, you know, companies pledging to be good,
right,
you know, to make
right.
W happy, you know.
Dana, you raise great points, all of them. I think there's a certain euphoria in the air just that there weren't more bad apples falling in the dozens or scores out of the trees today. But you're absolutely right that the problems here have been proven to be deep. Jay Lorsch, you know, yeah, we're happy that there weren't tons of really rotten books being opened today.
Yeah.
But as you pointed out, the stock option issue has yet to be really resolved. What about the issue that Dana brings up? And thank you for your call, Dana. What about this issue of accountants also serving as consultants? I know that that's been a lot of talk and debate about that. Has there been any new wall built there?
Well, I think there has been a wall built there. I think the Sarbanes-Oxley bill helped define that, and I think most of the accountants have gotten out of the main consulting business, that is the information technology business. There's still some questions about other pieces of consulting they're doing, but my sense is we're headed in a direction in which accountants are going to have to go back to being accountants,
mm-hmm.
primarily.
Mm-hmm. And to Dana's deeper question, which I think everybody feels these days, that there's just something fundamentally out of whack with the way the top brass in American business see themselves and their role, that they're willing to take too much money, they're willing to push the lines or have been too much. It's easy to talk about change in that, but do you really see it happening?
I think that's the hard part. We've gotten 45 minutes into this conversation. We haven't mentioned the word greed, I don't think, yet. But I think that's what Dana's referring to. I mean, there are a lot of people very upset with the kinds of compensation packages CEOs have gotten and the fact that it really has turned out not to be connected necessarily to corporate performance. And I think that is a problem which is out there and which some bodies, including a lot of boards across America, are going to have to figure out how to put that genie back in the bottle.
You're sitting at Harvard Business School. A lot of these CEOs and board members passed through your
right.
Ivy halls. Can this happen? Can you turn it around?
I think that's a very important question. My guess is somehow, some way, it will get turned around, but it may take some time. But I think it has really gotten out of whack, and I think that's the other shoe that's got to drop before a lot of people are going to feel not just confident, but, you know, happy with American lead business leaders. I mean, when you see people mistrusting business leaders to a greater extent than they do politicians in Washington, and that's what these recent surveys have been showing.
Mm-hmm.
You got a problem. It's not just a question of, you know, of trust in the sense of trusting the accounting. It's the fact that, do you really think these are good, honest people? And I think the business community has lost a lot of its confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the confidence of the American public, and it's around that compensation.
No
issue.
Question about it. John is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I had recently purchased some Tyco. I was looking on the list, and I noticed that Tyco wasn't on the list. So I assume it's because it's an offshore company. I was wondering how that affects it, if that's one more reason why companies should go offshore, because there's less meddling by the federal government?
Less scrutiny. That is a good question. There's been a lot of pressure through public criticism of companies who have moved offshore to avoid American taxes. If they're listed in the United States, if they're on the big board in New York, do they have to apply by these SEC rules?
Well, I think under the SEC rules, they may not have to apply, but I think under the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, they will have to. So, I mean, they've got a temporary respite, but it's not for long.
So you don't see this driving more firms offshore?
I don't think so, because I think that loophole is going to be closed also.
Mm-hmm. Bob is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Well, today didn't matter in the least. This was all a farce. Harvey Pitt is head of the SEC. This is a man who spent his career figuring out how to defeat the agency he's running. Mm-hmm. These men could sign forms saying the moon was made of green cheese, and he'd bobble his head saying yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know there's a history with Harvey Pitt, and it's been well worked over in recent weeks. But do you take any comfort, Bob, from the reports that have come in so far?
In a word, no.
And it's because of who's sitting at the top of the SEC or something?
No, it's who's sitting in the White House,
mm-hmm.
who appointed the head of the SEC,
mm-hmm.
who happens to be best friend with most of these criminals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so 900 companies signed it. Great. We didn't find a whole bunch of huge apple. That's because they put the lid on the barrel.
So what would make you, Bob, feel like things are getting back on the right track? What would it take?
Ken Lay getting a lethal injection.
Well, okay. All right. Shy of murder or capital punishment.
Okay. How about a room in Leavenworth?
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be possible for a few.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen. We know this. This is Bush's SEC. They're going to get a country club.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's George Bush sitting on top of it. Bob, thanks for your call. Jay Lorsch, it's a question that's widely asked with this business-friendly president in the White House. And, of course, Bill Clinton was billed as business-friendly as well. Everybody's been business-friendly
Absolutely.
Lately. But do we have a government that is going to lay down a new regime that's strong enough to turn the tide?
You know, I think there's a lot of suspicion of the sort that this gentleman just reflected about how serious the current administration is about reinforcing this stuff, and therefore there's this question of the legitimacy of Harvey Pitt. I'm not an expert on, Harvey Pitt. I do know that there's a lot of suspicion, and there are a lot of people who are saying he won't last long. I'm not a political analyst, so I won't make a judgment about that. But I think it is very clear that that a lot of the American people want change. And so I think if the administration doesn't do a serious job of it, they may be at risk in the November elections.
He's held on so far, but the anger is deep out there. Jeff is on the line. Hello, Jeff. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm a securities lawyer practicing in Boston, Massachusetts, and mm-hmm. I found it very interesting to hear the sort of public view of the certification requirement, because I can tell you, not from the current certification requirement, because none of my clients are currently subject to the existing certification requirement that had to go in today, but
right.
Because of the Sarbanes-Oxley expansion of that certification requirement, there is a tremendous amount of attention that's necessary.
Jeff, we're losing you, but I think we've got your point, and that is, Jay Lorsch, right now it's under 1,000 firms. But as Sarbanes-Oxley comes in, it's going to be 14,000 firms policed by the SEC that are going to have to have the signatures, attest to their books. I guess Jeff is raising the other view as a securities attorney, saying, hey, this is getting people's attention.
Well, I think it is. And the broader, I hope that somebody gives the SEC the budget, incidentally, to do the job they have to do with these 14,000 certificates, because, that's going to be a big number, and it's going to be a complicated number, and somebody's going to have to make sure that this what's being said is really true.
We saw $100 million more in the pipeline for the SEC budget, I guess. But, of course, earlier this year, there were still moves to cut that budget.
Yeah, well, I think that's a drop in the bucket. My understanding is they need a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. Jay Lorsch, you can hear loud and clear tonight from the business side the sense, hey, things are really changing here. And from the public sense the side, it's going to take a lot of show me before we believe that this has really been fixed.
Well, Tom, I'm from Missouri, where show me came from, and I believe that while this is a great, may look like a positive day, and it may do something to restore confidence, I hope it does. That was sort of the earlier view we were taking. I think the reality is there's a lot of time that's going to have to elapse before we really before the American public gets over this, the investment public. I mean, there have been too many people that have lost too much money and are too angry about it. So just the CEO signing certificates is not going to solve the problem by itself.
Mm. Jay Lorsch, thank you so much for being with us tonight. It's terrific having you. Jay Lorsch is professor of human relations at Harvard Business School. He's author of Aligning the Stars, How to Succeed When Professionals Drive the Results. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Log on to onpointradio.org and click on Forums. In a moment, Pakistan's president lashes out at Islamic militants. This is On Point. Fifty-five years ago tomorrow, Pakistan won its independence from the British Empire. Pakistan's president, Pervez Musharraf, was expected to give a short ceremonial speech in Urdu today to mark the occasion. Instead, he delivered a 40-minute speech in English that addressed many of the concerns that the people of Pakistan and the international community have had about his government. Musharraf lashed out at Islamic militants, and he promised that October elections will usher in an era of true democracy in Pakistan. Here's an excerpt from Musharraf's speech.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan has been a victim of terrorism for long. After the 11th September incident, we have been at the forefront of international war on terrorism. We stand firmly committed to root out this scourge so that the world is a safer place to live in. At home, an insignificant minority has held the entire nation hostage to their misconceived views of Islam and fanatical acts of terrorism. They are spreading the malice of sectarianism, laced with poisons of religious intolerance and violence. The recent attacks, specially directed at the places of worship of our Christian brothers and sisters, are the most shameful and despicable examples of terrorism. All this in the name of Islam. These misled criminals and their terrorist patrons and tutors even have the audacity to think their actions are the route to Jannah. Is this the true spirit of Islam? Is this the religion that we all are so proud of? Where is the tolerance, the magnanimity, the chivalry, and the large-heartedness that characterized true Muslims? We were never so cowardly as to hide and then try to kill children and women. Other than the innocent victims who get killed, who is the loser? Nobody but Pakistan, your country, and the poor of Pakistan, whose sustenance depends on jobs through investment, which, by the way, are we playing in the hands of enemies of Pakistan? My Pakistani brothers and sisters, we all have to put in a joint effort to root out those who are maligning our religion and tarnishing the image of Pakistan while imagining themselves to be ultra-Islamist.
Pakistan's president, Pervez Musharraf, addressing his nation in a speech earlier today. The speech was part of the commemoration of Pakistan's Independence Day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're